Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. How are you? You know, I love all you ladies and gents. You folks of many persuasions in all 50 states and overseas who listen in. I really do. It is 3:30 in the morning. Actually, how about 3:45 in the morning on Saturday, November 4th. 1 year ago today, Donald Trump was elected, November 4th, 2016. Something to think about, isn't it? And we're going to be talking a little bit about what activities are Antifa, the alt-left, the neo-Nazis and fascists of today have planned for today and overall. And we're going to be talking about, well, lo and behold, you know which of your media hosts that you listen to was the first, in fact, the only up to this week, to talk about the unholy alliance between the alt-left and radical Islam? That's right, yours truly. I was bringing that up more than 18 months ago. In fact, I did one whole show devoted only to it. It was called The Unholy Alliance. You can type it in the search bar and you can listen. And all of a sudden, this week, there are three, not one, not two, but three articles, first time ever I've seen them, in various publications about the linkage between the alt-left and radical Islam. And one of these articles, which I'm going to share bits and pieces of you, proves, or should we say, goes a long way to proving my hypothesis on the motives of Mr. Paddock down there, the shooter in Las Vegas, who I said was an alt-left Antifa who received training, perhaps weapons, advice, and planning assistance from ISIS, who was on four times, the only time that they have doubled down twice, claimed responsibility for the Las Vegas attack. I thought the whole thing is rather interesting. You know, it's really interesting when you're doing this kind of work, this media work for all you great listeners. But the dots that you see materialize years ago, months ago, whenever it is on whatever the subject is, when you see those dots become more and more numerous, and suddenly connect in exactly the same way that you connected the original dots long before anyone, underline that, anyone else did. It's really interesting. And it's really interesting to find nuggets of substantiation for your conclusions months and years ago that are just coming up today, seemingly divorced from other things, but nonetheless fitting into the particular puzzle that you put together and shared with your listeners. It's fascinating, actually. Terrifying, but fascinating. But we're going to talk about a lot today. A lot. We're going to talk about New York terror, and in that context, the unholy alliance between the alt-left and radical Islam, which it seems the rest of the planet has just, literally in the last few weeks, woken up to. In fact, there's a book that's just coming out by Ed Klein, who has been on my show. You can put his name in the search bar and listen, Ed Klein. That's K-L-E-I-N. Big radio host and author back on the East Coast. And I think you will, you know, the book is about that. It's about the alt-left and the radical Islamic connections. And it seems, gee, now that Mr. Obama is in office, the FBI was actually let loose to begin investigating this possible tie between, shh, I know Barry never said it, but radical Islam, radical Islam and the Antifa, and all the groups that are associated with Antifa, all funded by Soros, all run by the same cabal of alt-left money, power, and control freaks, and supported in all sorts of nefarious ways by the powers that be in the Democratic Party, which is something else we're going to talk about today, because the Democratic Party is disintegrating right before our eyes. You know, the Republicans may be fractured and fractious, but the Democratic Party is like melting. They're having a meltdown. Meltdown over Trump, a meltdown over the revelations of Hillary, which, by the way, yesterday there were even more. I mean, this was a really bad week for the Democratic Party. Not for Democrats, not for true blue Democrats, who are Americans and liberal. They just look at things kind of to the left of where us conservatives do, but they are Americans through and through. We're talking about the progressives, the progressive wing. Not the wing. The progressives control the Democratic Party. The moderates, the liberals, they're few and far between and they have no power whatsoever. That party has completely been changed by, well, it's been changing for a long time, but Barack Obama kind of completed the process, put the nail in the coffin, as did Hillary Clinton with her crooked, slimy, nasty, felonious, treasonous ways. By the way, you could use those same adjectives and adverbs for Mr. Obama and his cabal. Clinton at the state, Obama at the helm, supported by Iran Tehran born Valerie Jarrett, and Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch at Justice. Now that is a scary triumvirate. And they did scary things. And they're now coming to light. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're going to talk also today, and this morning, early this morning, we're going to talk about a church that was founded and attended by George Washington, who no longer likes George Washington. A remarkable story, which really portends something much greater. And also about the alt-left, I might add. And a number of you had questions. I got a number of emails. The show I did last week or the week before, you know, after a while, you do this many shows, you read this much stuff, you do this much research to bring you the right things that nobody else brings you. And sometimes they kind of blend together. Thank God the producers and stations put together a tremendous website, www.ontherightsideradio.com, with a tremendous, huge now archive of articles. You know, there are 40 like every week under certain categories. Many of them go to support the particular stories I'm talking about that week, and the others are fascinating, and I didn't get a chance to talk to them since I'm limited to my, give or take, hour and a half. So, many of you wrote, I digress there, many of you wrote and said, now, wait a minute, you were talking about this Uranium One deal, and I believe, folks, if you put in Uranium One, you'll get all the shows I did on that. I was talking about Uranium One, give or take, a year and a half ago when nobody else was talking about it, and I did a big show here in the last 2 weeks, which I think will bring it really into focus for you. But in that show, I mentioned that Robert Mueller, yes, the same Robert Mueller who now mysteriously was appointed by Mr. Rosenstein at the Justice Department, the assistant AG, who mysteriously, like Mr. Mueller's chief shall we say, investigator-prosecutor, Mr. Weinstein, they were all involved in the Uranium One deal. Mr. Weinstein was at the FBI and in charge of the investigation. Mr. Mueller was head of the FBI, and, it's just amazing. And our other little buddy here, we have Mueller, and we have Weinstein, and we have, then we have this guy then we have this guy who was the U.S. attorney in New Jersey, who was the U.S. attorney who was in charge of the investigation, overseeing or working with the FBI, Weinstein, and Mueller, the three of them. And it just so happens that this guy Rosenstein is the guy who appointed Mueller to investigate the Trump-Russia connection, which we all now know, including them, does not exist, has never existed, and was concocted by them, others, and particularly Hillary Clinton, through the fake news Golden P dossier that in the last week we learned Hillary Clinton paid for, along with the DNC. Now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how all that ties into the new revelations this week, because it does. I mean, we now have, I divided the Hillary Clinton felonies, treasons, and scandals into three separate, should we say, parts for you in that last show. And I think it was as succinct and, should we say, presented as well as anything on media, because nobody else, they were all talking in bits and pieces. I tied it all together for you. And now we have a fourth component with revelations by Donna Brazile. No cherry herself, by the way. I mean, this is the lady who leaked, if you remember, she leaked CNN questions prior to debates between Hillary and Trump and Hillary and Bernie. So, she's no rose petal. But she took over from the disgraced and also felonious and treasonous Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who had been the head of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, when Debbie Wasserman Schultz was booted out after the Podesta email. Not hack, but leak, because I think that's our friend who unfortunately was murdered for his efforts, Seth Richards, and not the Russians. Anyway, the emails I got was they were asking about a little piece of that segment in that last show where I said that Robert Mueller delivered the sample yellow cake from the uranium mine in Wyoming, of all places, prior to the Uranium One deal going down. You know, the sale of 20% of our uranium deposits by American interests approved by Obama appointees, Obama, Clinton, Holder, etc. When the United States, folks, has to import uranium. Even with what we were getting from the Wyoming mine, we have to import uranium. Yet these people, supposedly Americans, supposedly representing our interest and concerned about our security, are off making all sorts of money on the side through graft and corruption, which the Mueller, Weinstein, Rosenstein investigation absolutely proved, which Obama absolutely knew, and which got swept under the carpet by Eric Holder in 2009 and 2010, they're off selling 20% of our in-the-ground stockpile when we are net importers of that commodity? I mean, you know, this is kind of easy to figure out, even for a poor old hayseed in Wyoming. Anyway, a number of you wrote and said, where on earth did you get, we haven't heard that anywhere. In fact, a number of you wrote and said, we haven't heard many of these facts, and certainly not the way they were presented anywhere. But you wanted to know specifically where I got the information that Robert Mueller, when he was head of the FBI, let me underline this, when he was head of the FBI, is the gentleman, that's right, and the FBI, as my producer just reminded me, and the FBI at that time is investigating the deal. He's the one who delivers the yellow cake sample to Moscow. You know, those Russians. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. I got it from none other than WikiLeaks. And no matter what you think of Julian Assange, he's never been wrong in 11 years. And it was a classified cable that WikiLeaks got hold of somehow. I would imagine it was an internal leak by a Patriot somewhere either in the FBI or the State Department or who knows where. And it's dated August 17th, 2009. So this will answer your questions because I'm going to read it to you, or at least the salient portions. Quote, over 2 years ago, Russia requested a 10-gram sample of highly enriched uranium, HEU, that is the chemical call sign, seized in early 2006 in Georgia during a nuclear smuggling sting operation involving one Russian national and several Georgian accomplices. The seized HEU was transferred to U.S. custody and is being held at a secure DOE facility, which, by the way, folks, I've done some research on, was at the Uranium One site. In response to the Russian request, the Georgian government authorized the United States to share a sample of the material with the Russians for forensic analysis. Given Russia's reluctance to act so far, FBI Mueller's delivery of the sample will underscore to Russia our commitment to follow through on this case. Embassy Moscow is requested to alert at the highest appropriate level the Russian Federation, that, by the way, is Putin, folks, the Russian Federation, that FBI Director Mueller plans to deliver the HEU sample once he arrives to Moscow on September 21, 2009. Amazing. Amazing. By the way, this wasn't just happen chance that the Russians wanted Mueller to be the delivery boy and that Mueller was the designated delivery boy, because he'd originally planned to bring the sample with him on a trip in April of 2009, but for whatever reason the trip was canceled or he couldn't make, I mean, I don't know the background of that. And quote, the transfer was postponed to September so Mueller could be there, unquote. So I hope that answers your questions. I don't put these tidbits in these sorrowful tales of the betrayal of America that I bring you without backup. And there is your backup for those of you that requested it. We're also going to be talking a little bit about Antifa and the American Communist Revolutionary Party. Well, it's all the same, folks. Occupy Wall Street, Antifa, the American Communist Party, the Communist Revolutionary Party of America, and a number of other groups. They're all the same. The head honchos are the same. They share the same transient members. They get their funding from the same place in one way, shape, or form, mostly sourced from Soros organizations like the Open Society deal. By the way, he transferred $18 billion, Mr. Soros did, of his fortune to the Open Society Foundation for use and payment to and support of alt-left organizations around the world. Do you know there's like five countries now he's banned from, and any of his merry band of fellow whackball alt-left folks are banned from, including the Ukraine, Hungary, and several others. That, however, is yet another tale, which I will bring you one of these days. We're also going to talk a little bit about the tax bill, because that's money in and out of your pocket. And, you know, I hear all these talking heads, particularly these financial pundits, some on the radio, some on the TV, some in the newsletters I get, pontificating about this, that, and the other. And, you know, there's nothing to pontificate about. There's no tax bill yet. And I've talked about that in the past few shows, too. You can put that in, tax bill or tax. But there's a couple things which are beginning to germinate that I'm going to bring to your attention, along with an update on where it really is. Forget what you hear on the mainstream media. And finally, if we have time, we're going to talk about a study by the Cato Group. This is fascinating. The Cato Group is widely respected by both left and right. They are pretty much in the middle. You never know which way really they're going to swing, if they really do swing, on an issue. It could be left, it could be right, and their polls are pretty extensive. They don't do a lot of them, and when they do, people sit up and take notice. Well, it just so happens that they concluded this last week a poll of what Americans think of political correctness. But they asked many more questions that revolved around that, and the answers and the percentages of Americans who think this way or that, and the breakdown of those percentages into Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, and liberals is, wow, breathtaking. So I'm hoping we have time to get to that tonight. And we are going to talk a little bit tonight. I keep saying tonight. I mean, it's still dark out, although it's a beautiful full moon, which I hope you all got to enjoy no matter where you are. But it is now 10 after 4. I'm yakking away here. 20 minutes have already flown by. I'm going to talk about the bad week for the left and the progressive Dems. And we're going to talk a little bit about the FBI kind of in general, because I'm going to tie some threads together for you there too, which I don't think anybody has really done in one concise little segment. And finally, we are going to talk about a story. In fact, I'm going to start us off with a story. I got so much paper here on my studio desk that is just a friggin' joke. Hopefully I can find stuff as I'm talking to you this morning. All right, so my story. Let's start off with my story. So if you plug into the search bar insurance, I think you will come up with two shows that I did, 2, 3, 4 months ago, where I told you about an insurance company and how they had taken literally a $3,300 or $3,400, whatever it was, claim and managed to create a tens of thousands of dollars liability for themselves by being bureaucrats. In other words, supplanting reality and common sense with forms and rules. Or made up rules, who knows? I don't have the finalization of that story for you yet, although I will, and I will share it with you. Why don't we just suffice it to say that their liability has now gone into the hundreds of thousands a remarkable tale. Might have to go on my next Land for Love and Money book, Land for Love and Money Volume 2. But I'm going to tell you a similar story. So I drive a Ford Lariat F-350. And I have driven Ford trucks for, I don't know, 40 some odd years. And I have probably owned 20 of them in that time period. And it's not that I got a new truck every year, folks, just so you know. I mean, once in a while they got wrecked or whatever happened, happened. But my son drives a Ford. My daughter drives a Ford. The ranch hands drive Fords. We have a second Ford at the ranch, which is the snowplow dump truck, etc., etc. In other words, it's kind of a Ford outfit. And I love Fords. Well, the Ford that I'm driving had a... I was zipping along somewhere. This summer, the engine light comes on. This is probably August now. And the truck started acting really quite sluggishly. It's a diesel turbo and has a lot of power, and it didn't have the power. So I go into the local shop in town, and they put their machine on it, and they diagnose it as some sensor somewhere in the engine. And I am told, listen, you know, you can drive it, but you're taking the chances of burning up the turbos, damaging the engine. It may quit on you. You may have to be towed. And we recommend you get this fixed ASAP. I think it was a crankcase sensor, something like that. I'm you know, my mechanical abilities do exist, but they don't go so far as what sensor is what in a complicated turbo diesel engine. So I said, sure. And as a backdrop to this story, there used to be a Ford dealership in town where we did most of our service. I never thought they were great, but I never thought they were terrible. And they were Ford, and they had Ford parts, and they were pretty friendly, and they were, you know, ridiculously expensive, but they reasonably got things fixed. They seem to stand behind their work, and that's where we took our trucks. Well, 2, 3, 4 years ago, when Obama was beating on coal and other energy and things were in a slump in Wyoming, they closed that dealership and consolidated everything into their Casper dealership, building a big, new, fancy dealership up there. And their name, by the way, is Grainer Ford. I don't mind sharing that name with you whatsoever, since this story is absolutely true. And some of it is also the expression of my opinion. Anyway, I had to go to Casper the other day, which I rarely do. In fact, I rarely go to town. But I had to go to Casper to do some stuff. Part of it was radio stuff for this show, in fact. And part of it was just running some errands, picking up some things hither, yither, and yon that I can't get in town. And as part of that, the repair that I had done to my truck, oh, I don't know, 6, 8 weeks ago, whenever it was, the repair guys had told me, you know, this part is covered by your 100,000-mile engine warranty from Ford. And so I went online and I called Ford National Service and said, okay, you know, how do you want me to do this? I could drive it to Casper, but that's like a 3-hour round trip drive. I'm going to have to leave it up there. Somebody's going to have to come up, pick me up, and the truck may not make it. You may wind up towing it, and there may be further damage, which will cost you even more, since it's in the engine and you've warrantied the engine and the truck is well under 100,000 miles. And they said, no, you can get it fixed there. Just bring the bill that needs to specify what the mileage is at the time that the work was done and or your truck, so we can see that it's under 100,000 miles, and the part, and just bring it to any Ford dealer, and you'll get reimbursed. So the bill for the part and the labor, I think the part was $68. The labor was about $230. I guarantee it's less than Ford would have done it for. And this little shop that we bring our stuff to now does a terrific job. They saved the part for me. They wrapped it in a nice big blue, very heavy plastic bag and taped it shut so it didn't smell and all that kind of stuff. And that's been out here on the patio, hidden behind tools. I threw that in the truck and off to Casper I went. And I stop at Griner Ford, and I walk in with the blue bag and the part under my arm and my bill and the whole nine yards. And I tell the gal, the receptionist at the service desk, about this story. And to make a long story short, she says, "Gee, I've never heard of this. I'll have to get the service administrator." Well, I wait about 10 minutes because the service administrator is, I guess, just too busy to see me. Finally, she comes out and says, "Well, I don't think we can do anything. You should have had the work done here." So I explained the whole deal to her. No. The truck might not have made it here. It might have cost you $5,000 or $6,000 instead of $301, the total of this bill. I have the printout from your website right here that the part is covered. What to do if it has to be repaired somewhere other than a Ford authorized repair shop. And I got everything with me. I got the part, I got the bill, I got the mileage, I got the certification, I got the whole thing. "Well, I'll just have to check on that." I said, "Well, do you want me to leave the part with you?" "Well, that's okay." I said, "Well, I'd like a receipt for it." "Well, maybe you better take it with you." Anyway, the receptionist was fine. The service administrator Griner was snooty, aloof, unhelpful, and rude. And by the way, we've bought trucks from Griner. So I went out to the vehicle. I didn't have to be at my next appointment for about a half an hour, and I was not a happy clam. So I get on my cell phone. I call Ford National again. I tell them the whole story. I register the complaint over the treatment at Griner. And they say, "Oh, well, we'll bring this to the whatever department it is. And they'll contact you by email." And they had my whole, you know, she was reading me off stuff about all the Ford trucks I've owned over the years, et cetera, et cetera. So I said, "Well, that would be great." Anyway, that lady was very helpful. Yesterday, I get an email from Ford National saying, "We're so sorry, but we can't render the financial assistance that you requested." Well, you know, folks, this is not financial assistance. This is a promise a manufacturer made to me on a warranty. I'll tell you that when we sell hay on our ranches and we guarantee the hay, and that is if more than 20% of a bale is for whatever reason, because we're proud of our hay and we're sold out, and we're usually sold out literally before the last hay is cut. And there's horse operations from five states that buy from us year in, year out, including a bunch of local folks that we take care of. So we're proud of that hay. And if for any reason we've screwed up on a bale, you know, for whatever, it was lying across a ditch and part of it got wet and there was mold, you know, we replace it. And all we ask is, you know, you bring back the bale or you bring back the rotten part of the bale so we can see it, and we'll give you a replacement bale. No questions asked. And we have never reneged on that guarantee. But in this case, a customer who between he, his family, and his businesses have probably purchased 40 Ford vehicles, Ford trucks, over the last four plus or minus decades, at an average cost, you know, they used to be like $18,000 new way back when. Now they're $70,000 new. So let's say an average cost of $40,000 a vehicle. $1.6 million worth of business over four decades from one family and or ranch, however you want to look at it, to Ford Motor. And they couldn't stand behind the demonstrated, absolutely certified, under warranty mileage replacement part when the request was made exactly per the verbal instructions from their national office and exactly per the website. And not only that, they were treated rudely by a Ford employee. So I bring you that story because when you guarantee something, you stand behind it, or you will have very, very, very unhappy folks on the other side. So that's my story for this morning. Now, I've managed to consume about 35 minutes here just telling you about the show and sharing you some information, answering some of your questions from the previous show, and giving you today's story. So let's get into the meat of the matter because we got a lot to cover. First of all, within the big, big, big picture, the overall context of this unholy alliance between the alt-left and radical Islam comes this terror thing in New York this past week. What was it, 4 days ago, I believe? And I mean, really tragic, you know. This whackball jihadi rents a truck, drives into the walkway bike path along the West Side Highway. I don't know how many of you folks have ever seen it. And basically kills, I believe it was 8 or 9 people, severely injures another 12, several kids in there because kids were getting out of school at that time, 5 poor Argentinians who were there celebrating a 30th class reunion at their Argentinian high school, a beautiful woman, a young mother of 2 kids from Belgium. I mean, wow. Just like Las Vegas, just like the nightclub down in Florida, just like San Bernardino, just like Fort Hood. I mean, it just takes your breath away. It makes you really think about what scum these jihadis are. And they have been joined over the past, in my mind, it began with Obama's election. They've been joined in the past 8 years, and ever more so in the past 2 or 3 years, by the alt-left. Because they're united with their hatred of America, their hatred of you, and the hatred of both the countries and your values. And, of course, they both operate, if you really look at it, on similar ideologies. One is religious, should we say, fueled control and intolerance, and the other is ideologically fueled control and intolerance. And where I'm going with this is into the next segment with the FBI when I'm done with this one. Because the FBI had this guy on their watch list. They knew he had terrorist affiliations. I mean, you got to listen to this now. They knew he had terrorist affiliations and terrorist leanings in 2015 and actually interviewed him, I believe, on more than one occasion and did nothing because their hands were tied by Loretta Lynch and Obama policies. And remember, those folks, Loretta Lynch's first thing when there's a terror attack was, I'll throw anybody who doesn't like Muslims in jail. And Barack Obama's reaction was, well, we'll have to wait and see what happened, and maybe it was just extremists. I mean, he never did use the words radical Islam or Islamic terror. So the FBI leaves this guy on the street. And further, we find out that this guy came here on one of those diversity visas, which I had never heard about. I got to tell you, I'd never heard about it. And apparently, from what I can hear on the air and what I can read, just about nobody else ever heard of it either. So it's one of those little gotchas, you know, that the Congress stuck in there, Democrats and Republicans who believe in open borders more than they believe in American values or your job. And the diversity visa is basically a lottery system. And the lottery system happens to include areas which who knows who, the State Department, under the control of Hillary Clinton. Oh my, how the triumvirate keeps going. The State Department determines which countries are underrepresented in the United States because we want diversity. You know, that magic word that the alt-left uses, diversity. Diversity is such a good thing. I mean, America's pretty diverse, folks. We're all from different places, if you trace us all back. And we've had about 60 million immigrants in the last, give or take, 20 years. So, you know, I mean, this is not like, shall we say, northern Finland, where everybody is 6 foot tall and blonde. This diversity visa program is a lottery. And if you get picked, you come on over. And this terrorist was picked from Uzbekistan, which, by the way, is a known radical Islamist terrorist-generating hotspot. He wasn't vetted whatsoever. The reports that I have read, and I believe some of the major channels are checking on this right now, is that since he got here in 2010, I believe, since he got here, he is brought over through the chain migration I've talked about. Put it right in the search bar, chain migration. And which now, by the way, this week, now everybody else is talking about. Wow. Once again, ahead of the pack. The chain migration, he's brought over 23 of his family members. Now, folks, if you are trying to fundamentally transform the United States, which Barack Obama promised he would do, if you have 50,000 people coming in, never mind your normal visas, never mind your illegal immigration, never mind your normal immigration, and you have this chain migration policy, which applies to all these immigrants once they either achieve citizenship or green card status, in other words, permanent legal resident status, if you can bring in your family and they can bring in their family and on and on and on and on, if you take these 50,000 lottery visas, unvetted recipients, and you figure that each of them brings in just 10 family members, forget what the family members that you bring in are going to bring in. That's 500,000 people that you have generated over a time period from each year's lottery. I want you to think about that. So over 10 years, this system which the Democrats say, oh, it's diversity. This system of the 50,000 lotteries will generate, just using 10 family members per person, and not even including what those 10 family members will bring in when they get their green cards, 5 million new immigrants to America from places, shall we say, that are less than savory and anti-American. That should pique your interest. You should write your congressman and your senators right now and say, this diversity deal needs to go. like it needs to get off the books immediately. Anyway, so the FBI interviews this guy, lets him go. He gets in on a diversity visa. And, you know, as soon as this attack happened, you started hearing the words lone wolf, which, by the way, were words that were developed by the Obama administration to take your eye off the ball of radical Islam. And you heard the words, Muslim is a religion of peace. And you heard all the normal crap. Unfortunately for the left, this guy got out of his vehicle screaming Allahu Akbar while in his hospital room, since he was shot twice by the New York cops. He wanted to hang an ISIS flag. He had an ISIS sticker in the truck. ISIS, of course, took credit, rightfully so, for the dastardly act. And there was really no way around. There was no way around it, you know. This was an ISIS-inspired attack. In which case, folks, this guy's not a lone wolf. He may be acting alone, but he is part of the soldiers of Islam, which is exactly what these people call themselves. This is an army. It's all interconnected. It's interconnected by communications. It's interconnected by trips to the Mideast or other places for training and indoctrination. It's interconnected by the web. There's no such thing as a lone wolf anymore. Nonsense. There was never such thing as a lone wolf to begin with. That is a contrivance by the alt-left and another attempt to control speech, which, repeat after me, how many times do I say this on this show? Speech controls perception, and perception controls thought, and thought controls information, and information controls action and belief. Period. The alt-left knows this. So this guy was immediately dubbed by the alt-left a lone wolf. There is no such thing. And they told us how it's the religion of peace and he's an oddball. You know what? No such thing. Well, anyway, you know, the alt-left Hillary is driven by money and power and control. And the alt-left a la Obama is driven by ideology first and then money, power, and control. That's the only difference between them. But all of them are now linked with and allied with radical Islam. The gentleman's name, the scumbag who perpetrated this crime, this act of terror, was 22 years old, by the way. 22 years old. ISIS and Al-Qaeda, by the way, on these diversity visas, it is estimated that they have 10,000 soldiers of Islam who are active members of ISIS and Al-Qaeda in the Mideast and otherwise applying on this, hoping to be drawn on the lottery. In other words, they're using this as a method of infiltration, just as they do our open and porous borders, both north and south. There was an interesting study that was done. 5% of the Muslims in America, now there's 1.2 million, I think, at last count, but who knows if you can trust the government's numbers. So 5% would be approximately 60,000 Muslims in the United States think it's okay to use terror to advance Sharia law, Allah, and the Muslim ideology. 60,000 that we know of. Think about that for just a moment. And what is preventing us from wrapping all these people up is what the left likes to say is politically correct culture, diversity and equality and equity and all that stuff, but really is something much more than that. Way, way, way more than that. It is the support and shelter that the left is giving Islam. And they're giving support and shelter to Islam, folks, because they see in radical Islamic teachings and beliefs a belief structure similar to their own. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. By the way, this gentleman's name in Arabic, if translated to English, meant Sword of Allah. Now, do you think that might have been a tip-off, maybe, to somebody? Really? Sword of Allah? All right. Look, you're probably wondering where I'm going with all this. Well, where I'm really going with all this is, the purpose is not to inform you of the New York terror attack. You've been informed of that. You know all the details from mainstream media or wherever. Where I'm going is the wedding, the nasty, sordid wedding of the left and radical Islam, which we saw amply demonstrated with Barack Obama and his cabal. His appointment, I mean literal appointment, and or allowing the infiltration of both his White House and our security agencies with, should we say, Muslims who believed in Sharia. I'll be kind. I wouldn't call them radical Islamists, but they were Islamists. For those of you who are tuning in to me for the first time who have not heard these previous shows, you can type Unholy Alliance in the search bar. You can type Muslim in the search bar. You can type radical Islam in the search bar. You can listen to all my shows and interviews of national figures on this matter. So you have a, let me define the terms for you. A Muslim is a peaceful person who happens to be of the Muslim faith. They have their beliefs just like Hindus, Buddhists, Jews, Christians, doesn't matter. They are, if in America, Americans first, Muslims second. They put country over ideology and religion. Then you have Islamists. Islamists, there's all sorts of organizations which are riddled with Islamists, such as CARE. They are all branches in one way, shape, or form, formed and founded, funded by, or supported by the Muslim Brotherhood. Islamists believe that the world needs to go Sharia. But they're not willing to bomb anybody over it. They figure they'll get it done politically and over time, like, you know, through through diversity visas. And then you have the radical Islamists, like this scumbag in New York, who believes that they have to bring terror to innocent people to achieve their ideological and religious ends, which are, you are either Muslim and bound to Sharia law, or you are dead. You are an infidel. So those are the three categories of the Muslim faith. You know, on the Jewish side, you have kind of a similar type deal. You could categorize the Jewish side. You have Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, and then you have the Zionists. And there, you could even do it on the Christian side. I mean, the differentiation between radical Islam and, shall we say, the extreme ends of other religions, whatever they are, Christian, Jew, Buddhist, Hindu, doesn't matter, is this. Radical jihadis believe in killing innocent people to achieve their ends. None of the other, shall we say, stalwart fringes of any other religion believe in that, nor do they practice it. And that is a really big difference. I'm going to give you some stats here. There's been like 12,000, that's 12,000 plus terror attacks in which somebody lost their life since 9/11 2001 around the globe. Terror attacks in the United States have claimed more than thousands of lives, if you include Las Vegas, and I think we're right to include it, and thousands more injured. Because the alt-left has now wedded radical Islam, and the alt-left that was in control of this government for 8 years allowed Islamists to infiltrate the government in all sorts of tender places and high-ranking places and security places. The government is now part and parcel, unless Trump and his crew can get it cleaned up, is part and parcel of this nasty wedding. You don't believe me? All right. I'll tell you what. Right after the attack in New York, Obama tweets, "There has been an attack." A-N. An attack. Now, it was already known that this guy was Muslim, had screamed Allahu Akbar, the ISIS flags had been found, ISIS had claimed. Even Cuomo, we're going to get to him in a moment, the governor of New York, called it a terror attack. Even de Blasio, leftist that he is, had called it a terrorist attack. But Obama could not call it even a terrorist attack. It was an attack. Never mind radical Islam, never mind jihadi, never mind any of that stuff he's never said. It was an attack. That's the former president of the United States. The guy's been out of office for a year, thank God. We find out that Chuck Schumer, the senator of New York, is one of the biggest proponents and pushers of the diversity visa, which I did not know at that time. We found out, what I think was 3 years ago, I did a show that had a segment on this, that an FBI report put together under Eric Holder that became public under Loretta Lynch said the biggest threat facing America was not radical Islam, but returning veterans. FBI report. And we'll get into the FBI here in just a moment and how they all tie into this. De Blasio, moron that he is, the mayor of New York, after immediately coming out saying this is a terror attack, 2 days later gives a speech in which he goes, "Today we are all Muslims." Seriously, Google it up. His city was just attacked. 8 or 9 folks were just killed. Another dozen severely injured by a radical Islamist yelling Allahu Akbar. And he gives a speech saying, "Today we are all Muslims." Cuomo, the governor of New York, within 2 hours of the attack, comes out and says, yes, this was a terror attack, but he was a lone wolf. This is after ISIS has claimed responsibility. The guy has admitted from his hospital bed that he's a soldier of Islam and a supporter of ISIS. The ISIS stuff has been found all over the truck. He's asked to put the ISIS flag in his... But Cuomo, 2 hours later, can tell us this is unrelated to anything else, and he's a lone wolf. Okay. We find out, by the way, the same day, like 24 hours later, and if you remember back to Benghazi, yes, Benghazi again. If you remember back to Benghazi, we were told by Obama's talking heads that they had arrested, that they had found the head honcho who had planned the Benghazi attacks. Go back and Google it. And then we found out a few months later that, in fact, they had not nabbed the head honcho of the Benghazi attacks, but that he was living it up on sidewalks in Paris and other European countries, drinking wine and being interviewed by journalists. The government telling us at that time that, oh yeah, well, we didn't arrest him, but we can't find him. In the meantime, there's pictures of the guy, like, on the patio of a Paris restaurant, and there's interviews of him by journalists. The journalists could find him, and people could take pictures and post it, but our government couldn't find him to arrest him. He was arrested. He was arrested. He was nabbed by special forces units in Yemen the day after this terror attack and is now really in U.S. custody. Thank you, Mr. Trump, special forces, and a changing attitude, we hope, in government. Because I'm going to give you some examples of the attitude right up to this time. And then I'm going to tie it into Las Vegas a little bit, because there's been more revelations there. Okay. And if you remember, we're talking about the same FBI that generated or spawned Weissman, Mueller's right-hand guy, a prosecutor whose tactics are so unsavory that his convictions have been voted down 9-0. That's 9-0. By the Supreme Court of the United States, because he withheld evidence which would have exonerated people, overreached on indictments, and a host of other kind of egregious breaks with the rule of law. The particular case I'm talking about, by the way, and this is a little sidelight, just so that you have it in your thought bag, the particular case has to do with Enron, which was a huge scandal. Their accounting firm was Arthur Andersen, one of the big eight CPA firms at that time. They employed about 85,000 people worldwide. And in the convictions that this guy obtained through buddies in the lower courts, Arthur Andersen folded. 85,000 people lost their jobs. And then in the Supreme Court, when all the damage was done, the conviction was thrown out for the reasons I mentioned previously. Poor indictment, withholding of exoneration evidence, I mean, some big no-nos. So Weissman is a product of the FBI. I talked about him relative to Uranium One here just, 15 minutes ago. And you know, I chuckle over this stuff, but it's really not chuckling matters. It's sad, actually. And in a way, it's terrifying how out of control this government has become and how much disdain they hold all of us in. So Weissman is a product of the FBI. And then, of course, we have Mueller and Comey, the heads of the FBI. And the way corporate culture works, folks, is it flows from Obama to his people, including the nine people who approved the Uranium One deal, including Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch. And from there, it flows to the heads of the FBI, Mueller and Comey. And from there, it flows down the ladder into their organizations. And as more people who think like they do are appointed, you begin to have the formation of the deep state, which we are all contending with in various ways, shapes, and forms, particularly President Trump and his team right now. So, and the FBI interviewed this guy in 2015, as I told you, and let him go, despite the fact he at that time had known terror ties to ISIS, and his Arabic name was Sword of Allah. But did you know the FBI also interviewed the guy who killed 50 people in the Florida nightclub massacre? They did. And they let him go. And they interviewed the Boston bombers and let them go. And of course, the FBI conducted the investigation on Uranium One and swept it under carpet. Mueller delivers yellow cake to Moscow. And Eric Holder casts a vote to do the deal. Then, of course, we have Comey lying under oath, proven now, lying under oath to Congress. And we have his, shall we say, unpatriotic, to put it mildly, leak of his personal conversations with the President of the United States to the New York Times through a professor friend of his, alt-left, at Columbia University. And now we have Mueller investigating Trump for Russian collusion, for which there's been no evidence after a year, but apparently investigating only the Podestas when it comes to Hillary Clinton. And I can go on and on and on. The FBI interviewed, if you remember, the Arkansas recruiting station terror attack a few years back. The FBI had interviewed that suspect who became the perpetrator and let him go. And of course, the FBI, folks, is in charge of the investigation in Las Vegas. And the FBI a week ago basically said, it really doesn't matter. We're not giving any more information. I mean, literally. And we find out this week, this is our, now remember, Las Vegas is a month ago, a month ago. And we find out this week, actually the week before last, we find out that there is something to do with helicopters and armed men in helicopters and flight paths where they turned off their transponders in the helicopters. And we find out that the timeline, which has changed three times, and the story about Campos, the security guard, which has changed like five times, we find out that now there were two cops, off-duty cops, in the hallway outside the shooter's room after Campos got shot and before the shooter started from that room, that shooter, because there was more than one. That shooter started firing into the crowd. There were two off-duty cops right outside his door. And say what? Hello? The off-duty cops being employed by MGM, Mandalay Bay. I brought to you in previous shows in Las Vegas. You can just type it right in the search bar and you can listen to them. I think that show, which was a 2.5 hour special 3 or 4 weeks ago, seriously is, if not the best, it's one of the best overviews of the Las Vegas tragedy that was on broadcast media anywhere, period. So you can type that in the search bar and listen if you wish. But the story has changed since then. I mean, look, folks, it's 30 days later. There has been no press conferences. The FBI doesn't want to reveal any information. We find out the girlfriend, this week, we find out the girlfriend of Paddock, who mysteriously wasn't brought back to this country for 3 or 4 days from the Philippines, another hotbed of Islamic terrorism, by the way. Originally, they said she was cooperating and she had nothing to do with it. And this week, the Sheriff's Department, in some leak form or fashion, says, well, there's stuff that we don't think she's telling us. And we find out about these two off-duty cops outside the door at least 5 or 6 minutes before. We have found out previously that it was like 72 minutes at least from the time the shooting started to the time The SWAT team got down there and took down the door. We find out this past week, never revealed before, that, gee, a sheriff's deputy or FBI or some law enforcement gun went off accidentally in that hotel suite. Say, folks, if you know fire, you know firearms don't fire accidentally. Like, you don't lay them down and then they just go off. Somebody fires them, perhaps accidentally. A finger has to hit the trigger. And we're just learning about this 30 days later. We find out this week that the room has been scrubbed. The bullet holes are gone. And by the way, think about this. The bullet holes? I thought this guy committed suicide. We find out that all the shell casings, which, by the way, never matched the shell casings in the pictures, and I brought this to your attention before, do not match the number of shell casings which should have been in the pictures if this guy had been the only shooter. There were dozens of rounds rather than thousands of rounds. We also find out that Paddock, how do I say this? That Paddock had certain other ties to alt-left groups which were not previously revealed. Now, to wrap this all up in a bow for you, we have clear and convincing evidence just in this little segment about this incredibly nasty terror attack in New York. We have overwhelming evidence of the left trying to cover up motive or express sympathy or empathy for Islamists. We have, over the course of virtually every other major terror attack, and I left out San Bernardino, where there was also clues and law enforcement blew it. Every major terror attack in the United States over the last 4 or 5 years, in which more than 1,000 people have lost their lives and many more have been injured, have all been by people known to the FBI. In most cases, interviewed and or watched by the FBI. And in Las Vegas, we have the FBI apparently stonewalling information in cahoots with the Sheriff's Department of a sanctuary city. And we find out new things about Las Vegas, changing timelines, the girlfriend story, the whole whatever they were this week, every single day. And this wedding of the alt-left and Islam is now making the news. Not yet on mainstream media, and probably never will. But we find out this week that the FBI, again, the FBI, and this is through Klein's books and his articles leading up to the release of his book, the FBI followed a group of American anarchists, alt-left, to Germany. And they were joining their German counterpart, which is and I probably will pronounce this wrong. Apologies to my German audience. It's an Antifa, but in German. How's that? That's what it is. When they gathered to protest Trump's attendance at the G20 leaders a couple months back. The FBI watched while these Americans took part of the took part in the violence there in Europe at these demonstrations, including throwing Molotov cocktails and swinging bats and sticks. And they concluded, quote, some sort of common cause with the Americans who are determined to commit violence against the U.S. makes them potentially very useful to radical Islam, unquote. The FBI also followed a group of Antifa anarchists from Oakland, which, by the way, is a sister city to Berkeley, you know, University of Berkeley, Antifa, break the windows, etc., etc. Quote, now that the Bureau has determined ISIS, Al-Qaeda have followers in the radical U.S. resistance, that's Antifa, movement in the United States, it is clear there will be additional violence in the attacks on law enforcement and U.S. institutions, including banks. Quote, ties between three key leaders of the Oakland groups, names redacted, met in Hamburg with a leader of ACAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and AKIM, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, unquote. This is all prior to Las Vegas, folks. You'll see where I'm going here in a moment. Let me continue. The leader from ACAP is an Egyptian-born male who is known to be in charge of finances and recruiting for the group. There is evidence, listen to this carefully, there is evidence from informants that he is helping the Oakland group acquire the weapons they are seeking, primarily bomb-making equipment and toxic chemicals and gases. One of the men from Oakland traveled to Syria to meet with ISIS. The purpose was for training and tactics and for a bonding visit to discuss possible massive disruptive attacks in the United States. While in Hamburg, several of the Oakland-based criminals were photographed throwing Molotov cocktails and wielding iron bars. Though they are almost certainly on the verge of upping the caliber of their weaponry for use in the United States. The American anarchists communicate with the Islamic State and other terrorist organizations online on a variety of websites, on which they also find instructions on how to make bombs. As the Trump administration has demonstrated it's serious about destroying the Islamic State and depriving ISIS of territory in Iraq and Syria, the alliance between the American radicals and ISIS have grown even closer. And then Klein, by the way, in one of his articles writes, leading up to his book, quote, the FBI is really playing catch-up ball because the Obama administration refused to give the Bureau the resources it needed to effectively infiltrate and surveil the radical groups on college campuses. Any talk of a connection between radical Islam, a phrase the Obama people wouldn't even use, and American extremists was pretty much laughed off. Former Attorney General Loretta Lynch would have blown a gasket if she had heard the FBI was surveilling so-called college political organizations. All right, folks, take that information that I just shared with you from the FBI report, which came out a few months prior, just kept becoming public now in the last week through Klein's books, but which came out several months prior to the Las Vegas catastrophe, tragedy, massacre, whatever you want to call it. And couple that with what I've been telling you for 2 years, reinforcing tonight based on actual circumstances, the FBI's failed investigations of known terrorists in a whole bunch of bombing and terrorist incidents, and the alt-left political hierarchy's response to the New York terror attack. And what you come up with is one of those dots that suddenly appear before you that ties into all the other dots I've ever brought you. And specifically about Las Vegas. tie it again into the dot that this the Las Vegas situation is getting murkier, not clearer. That now we are cut off from information. Tie it in with all the things I told you in my special on Las Vegas 3 plus or minus weeks ago. And my conclusions, based on all the dots floating around out there from hundreds of different sources, that Paddock was seen and videoed at anti-Trump, Antifa-type events. That he had Antifa literature in the hotel room. That he had no known training in firearms or bomb making, but had all the materials and ingredients necessary for bombs in his car, 27 sophisticated weapons, made even more sophisticated by bump stocks, etc., the exact perfect angle of fire with the equations for the ballistics, but his girlfriend, his family, nobody close to him ever knew that he had any interest in guns. Combine that with his trips to the Mideast. There are actual photographs of himself in the Mideast and his girlfriend in the Mideast and his girlfriend's origin in the Philippines, a hotbed of radical Islam. My theory 3 weeks ago, right after the shooting, based on all this information, was that he was Antifa and with others, or by himself, I think with others, they had gone to ISIS. ISIS had helped them obtain weapons, training, and gave them logistical and planning support. And ISIS, as you know, has on four different occasions claimed Las Vegas as one of their attacks, which has been poo-pooed by the FBI, by the way. In fact, the FBI came out and said, 2 hours after Las Vegas, in their first press conference, that this did not appear to have anything to do with radical Islam. Really? 2 hours into your investigation in a huge, horrendous incident like this, and you already know? Huh. You don't know anything else 30 days later, but you know that 2 hours after the incident. Okay. Yeah, I believe you. Particularly based on your sterling track record and the lack of honesty. I'll be really kind. And the lack of honesty of the two people who have headed your organization, Mueller and Comey, over the last 10 years. And the complete treasonous lack of honesty by their immediate superiors, Loretta Lynch and Eric Holder, and the absolute treasonous acts and lack of acts of their superior, Barack Obama. Yeah, okay, I believe you. In any event, folks, all the information I gave you tonight points conclusively, and the next thing I'm going to do is give you some of the articles that came out this week. But the information I have given you thus far, in previous shows and tonight, this morning, excuse me, it's now 5:20 in the morning. All the information I've given you, in my mind, underlines, highlights, capitalizes, and italicizes my theory that Paddock was alt-left and acted in concert and with the support of radical Islam in the Las Vegas massacres. And unfortunately, we're going to see more of this before we see less of this. Because this is all about the policies that Trump is trying to overcome, that Obama implemented. In conjunction with the Islamists organizations, care, and a host of others. All right. There was an article that came out. Actually, there were three just this week. Muslims team with Antifa to shut down critics of Islam. In this article, I'm not going to go into great detail, but they talk about four or five speakers. Many of these guys scholars, number of books to their name, this has been their lifelong study, they're full-fledged professors with all sorts of honorary degrees. And this article hones in on small towns, Des Moines, Iowa, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and towns like that, where these people, I mean renowned experts, had planned to give talks that concerned Islamist activities in the United States. What Islamists, by the way, oh, no, I didn't talk about the Patterson Mosque. I'll come back to that. I was just reminded here that there's one thing I left out of your New York terror attack. But we can get back to that because it ties right in. So these four guys, over the course of the last, give or take, 4 months, just in the last 4 months now, have had a total of, I think it's 11 speaking engagements between them. They don't know each other. In these small towns, I gave you two examples. And their talks are, you know, they're studious talks. This is not like Muslims should go out of the United States. This is well thought out, scholarly, good, bad, ugly, whatever, here are the facts. Talks. Either at scheduled at public libraries, scheduled at meeting places and large dining halls. I mean, schedule way in advance, university in one case. And in every single case, alt-left Antifa, along with Muslim activists, have contacted the places that these people were supposed to speak, threatened them with all sorts of stuff, threatened to disrupt the meetings, managed to get at least 8 of the 11 venues canceled. These speakers had to rearrange new venues at literally at the very last minute, like on the way, to give their presentations. And those three venues were, rightfully so, the owners or the institution, whatever it was, said, no, we're not canceling the talk. The Antifa did show up with Islamists and proceeded to try and break up the meeting, standing up in the front row holding newspapers so people couldn't see the speaker, fighting with police when they were dragged out of the deal, you name it. This is now alt-left and Islamists acting together over the last 3 or 4 months in out-of-the-way places. This ain't New Sioux Falls, South Dakota, ain't New York. And a lot of this in these small towns seems to be organized by an attorney by the name of Taniza Islam, who, by the way, is a Bush Foundation fellow. Alliance with the globalists, and a civil rights activist, works as an immigration attorney representing Muslim refugees and illegal aliens from Central America. She's on the record as saying that anybody who objects to unlimited refugee settlement and illegal immigration is a white nationalist. Pretty amazing. She is linked to Linda Sarsour. Remember Linda Sarsour, the Sharia babe who was one of the organizers of the Vagina March, the 500,000 person woman march in Washington, D.C. I had a lot of her in that show, and that's one of my most popular shows, The Dance of the Angry Vaginas, I think it was. Just put that in the search bar, it'll come up. You can listen all about Linda Sarsour, who is a sorry spectacle of a human being. Anyway, I find that coming out in the course of all this other stuff I brought to you, most of it this week, is rather amazing. And to go a little bit further, what the Islamists are adopting from the Antifa is the Saul Alinsky type ad hominem attacks, you know, personal ridicule, the bigot, xenophobe, Islamophobe, racist, you know, hurl the epithet titles, white nationalist slurs. What one of these three articles concluded, I'm going to quote it to you, since the election of Donald Trump, a full convergence is playing out between radical leftists with ties to Indivisible, Antifa, and those with Islamist connections to organizations such as CARE, ISNA, and the Muslim Student Association. These are all organizations I've talked about in the past, folks. Type in CARE, C-A-I-R, in the search bar. Type in mosque in the search bar. I've talked about all these things, and I'm not breaking by much, but I'm going to digress just a bit. The mosque at which the New York terrorist worshipped, or radicalized, or whatever, is a mosque in Paterson, New Jersey, which the alt-left was quick to defend, if you want to Google it up, but really is a hotbed of radicalization. And one of the mosques that I brought to your attention over a year ago in that article on mosques, CARE, NAFA, and some of the, how all the mosques are owned and run by the same Islamist groups, and that they all have a political and social purpose, which is not pro-American or pro-American values. Once again, dots from the past suddenly are highlighted by an absolute current event dot slapping you in the face, right? It's sad, actually. It's sad. The protests only seem to roll in when conservatives take up the issue of Islam. That's another quote from this article. Anyone who questions whether open borders and welcoming Islamic Sharia law into your community is a good thing gets branded a white nationalist, racist, or bigot. Antifa and Islamists then announce the town bigots through social media posts, articles in the local newspaper, and even some TV spots. All right, so we have another dot in our little unholy alliance, do we not? By the way, this began in earnest in April 2017 when a heavily armed Muslim, Ahab Jaber, infiltrated a Christian conference at a hotel in Sioux Falls again. He entered the event with a handgun, then live-streamed threats to the Christians from his vehicle in the parking lot, had a cache of weapons, including a semi-automatic rifle, hundreds of rounds of ammunition, etc. The local prosecutor in Sioux Falls refused to prosecute, but the state prosecutor did prosecute, and he was convicted. You know, as I often say, you can't make this stuff up. I may go into detail on this, what they're trying to do. One of the discussions by one of these scholars, let me just give you the title, and I think you'll see, you know, this is not radical. Okay. The Trojan Horse of Interfaith Dialogue. That doesn't sound like a radical title to me. He was shut down, by the way, by people wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts. Remember, he's talking about Islam now. By Black Lives Matter t-shirts and others who were Antifa, from Antifa-affiliated groups called Expect Resistance and the IWW General Defense Committee Local 17. Quote, "That was the first time we saw that element, a communist group along with Black Lives Matter and an interfaith group called Unite Cloud teamed up with Islamists." So that's back in April. Kind of a new front, shall we say, but yet another indicator of this sordid wedding. The nuptials, if you will, the terrorist nuptials, the anti-American nuptials of the alt-left and radical Islam. This one speaker, who's like a professor, etc., said, quote, "The whole modus operandi is to shut down the event, make it expensive because you have to hire security, anything to stop this information from getting out to people who need to hear it." Along these lines, folks, along these lines, we have another, shall we say, church-related matter, or religious-related matter. So, the Christ Church in Alexandria, Virginia, one of the oldest in the country, one of its founders, it happens to be George Washington. And George Washington's family sat in and has sat in pew 5 of that church since prior to the Revolutionary War. Long prior to the Revolutionary War, I might add. And there is a plaque in that church dedicated to the family. There's also a plaque in that church dedicated to the family of Robert E. Lee, who I guess, I did not research this, was also a member of the church, obviously not a founder, but was an attendee of the services in the Christ Church. Well, that church, the folks who run that church now in blue, Northern Virginia, they're taking down the plaques and the George Washington memorabilia. Quote, "Many in our congregation feel a strong need for the church to stand clearly on the side of all are welcome, no exceptions." Huh? Wait a minute. So, all are welcome, no exceptions, but you're taking down George Washington's plaque. Do you think there's anybody in your massive congregation, this is a big church, that maybe likes the plaques? Do you think there's anybody in your congregation, you morons, that maybe likes American values, believes in history, is a student of the American Revolution? Or those, you know, those outdated documents called the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. What do you think? Or are they so low on your lofty, alt-left, progressive totem pole that their beliefs don't matter? You got one complaint, or two complaints, or even 10 complaints out of a congregation of thousands about a piece of history which you know, most places would kill for. By one of the founders of your church, the father of our country, and you're taking down all reference to him so that you don't insult this tiny minority? Oh, and you're removing Robert E. Lee's stuff too? You know, your host here, me, warned you that this was where this was going to go a couple months ago when they started this BS about taking down the Confederate statues. And here you have it, folks. In a church, no less, that George Washington was one of the founders of, that his family has sat in a certain pew, a rather famous pew, Pew 5, for centuries. And they're taking down all reference. I find that truly, truly, truly remarkable. And to sum it up for you, this is how wacky the alt-left is, which is going to lead into my next segment, by the way. This is how wacky the alt-left is. So this organization, this church, which is supposed to be welcoming to all, just based on religion, never mind on what the political or secular beliefs might be, this organization publicly proclaims, quote, all are welcome, no exceptions, unquote. And then in the name of this inclusiveness, a founding father and America's first president will be excluded. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right? You really can't make this stuff up. This is how insane the alt-left has become. And you know, the alt-left had a really, really, really bad week, which made me really, really, really happy. In the last week, not only did all this crap happen in New York with these nonsensical statements by Cuomo and de Blasio and Obama and the rest of them, the alt-left radical Islamist sympathizers, but The Hill, very respected paper and source of information, they announced that 25%, we didn't know how much yet, of the uranium that came out of the ground in the Uranium One deal was approved contrary to all the lies we've been told by progressive Democrats and by Obama and by Clinton, came out of the ground, and 25% of the uranium was approved by Obama's Nuclear Regulatory Commission to leave the country, which was not part of the original deal at all, and the original deal was withheld from Congress, as was this export of uranium. The uranium went to Canada, then to Europe, and then nobody knows where it went. What do you want to bet? It went to Iran. Maybe it went to North Korea. But I almost guarantee you, since Obama's at the bottom of this, along with Clinton, that some of it went to Iran. What country is supposed to be holding Iran's uranium? Oh yeah, Russia. That's right, Russia. Rosatom, by the way, the Russian nuclear company that bought the 20% in Uranium One, that got the 25% of the uranium in the ground out of the country to Canada, to Europe, and then to who knows where, Rosatom, the Russian state nuclear company, is, by the way, a known exporter in the past to both North Korea and Iran. Now, where do you think this uranium went? Right. The next thing that happened to the treasonous alt-left this week was Donna Brazile came out of the closet. Donna Brazile came out of the closet, former head of the DNC, took over from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and she blew the whistle on all of Hillary's crooked dealings with the DNC under Wasserman Schultz, and how Clinton, using money, gee, isn't that what Clinton does? using money, took over the DNC with a secret written agreement, no less, dictated its staffing, dictated its actions, dictated its contributions, and a host of other things I won't bore you with. The bottom line is, Donna Brazile has now blown the lid off with conclusive proof and a new book coming out of Hillary Clinton's crooked theft of the primaries from Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie Sanders kind of knew all this all along, and so did most of us, but this is now the proof, and it's worse than we thought. It wasn't just people in the tank for Clinton. It was that Clinton bought the tank. And in fact, the money that Clinton gave to the DNC needed because Barack Obama owed it $16 million or whatever it was from the 2016 campaign he hadn't repaid. Gee, so could there have been a deal? Let's think about this now. Let's connect some dots. Could there have been a deal where Barack Obama said, hey, Hillary, I don't want to pay this money back, and the DNC needs money, and if you give it money, I'll do X, Y, and Z for you. Not only that, you'll be in control of the DNC, and you can make sure Bernie doesn't get the nomination. No, they would have never done that. Would they have done that? Oh, not those guys. All right. The next thing that comes out. Oh, you want to hear how this happened? Well, Hillary gave $20 million to the DNC in return for complete control of the DNC per written agreement. The DNC then gave it out to the state committees, and then, really scummy Hillary, the state committees gave it back to Hillary. So in the end, Hillary got the control and the money and Barack Obama's assistance, shall we say, during her campaign. Yes. The other thing the alt-left got caught on is, you know, you've seen all these talking head Democrats on TV or on the radio. Oh, this tax cut is just for the rich, and it's not going to do anything for the middle class. It's actually going to cost the middle class money and all sorts of other nonsense. Now, you know, if you're not following this stuff, you might believe it. Well, guess who came out and exposed all that as a complete, total, knowing lie? The Washington Post. You know, the Washington Post is a left rag owned by Jeff Bezos from Amazon. But they came out, gave these people four Pinocchios, and said, no, the tax plan will actually save people $1,000 who are earning up to $86,000 a year, i.e. the middle class. So I really, their entire structure of their argument against Trump's tax plan is thrown out the window by one of their own rags. And not a good week. Okay, then we find out that Schumer was behind the diversity visa deal. Schumer, the senator from New York, where this terror attack just occurred, and where 9/11 occurred too, if you remember. Then we find out that a gal by the name of Cheryl Atamaj, and this goes back to the Uranium One deal, she was appointed to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission by Obama. Yes, that same commission that approved 25% of the uranium from the Uranium One deal going across the border to Canada while they lied about the fact that it wasn't allowed to leave our country. And that she has also acted as, both before and after her appointment to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission by Obama, as a consultant to Rosatom, the Russian nuclear company and its affiliates. And she actually wrote a memo to those companies after the 2009 Uranium One deal was done and Hillary Clinton's foundation received its $145 million from Rosatom's board members. I've told you about that in the previous show. She wrote a memo to the Russians saying, I'll summarize it for you, it's now okay to move the uranium out of the United States. That's kind of ugly, huh? The other bad thing that happened to the alt-left, you know, the alt-left has two mouthpieces and two control points, the mainstream media and some of the high-tech giants like Google, Google's subsidiaries, YouTube, Twitter. In my previous shows, I believe it was either last week or the week before, just type in Google, you can listen to the show in this, in the site search bar. I told you about how they were reconstructing their algorithms to limit conservative, to make it more difficult to find conservative stuff. In other words, if they don't like your political viewpoint, when you pull up a search engine, Google, YouTube, Twitter are going to make sure you don't find what you're looking for. I mean, just to make it real simple, okay? In other words, direct assault on the First Amendment. And one of the reasons antitrust should be brought against all of them. They're way too big, way too powerful, and way too left. Number one, Twitter takes down posts and ads by conservative folks over the course of the last month, including Congressman Marsha Blackburn. You've probably seen her on TV, quite conservative, one of the southern states. She had her ads up. They took them down. There's another outfit that Twitter took down just in the last week. And one of Twitter's employees on their last day, Twitter says, without Twitter's knowledge, Twitter says, actually took down Donald Trump's Twitter account for a day last week. At the same time, Google is now being sued by several outfits because over the last month, Google has taken them off Google search or has made their YouTube videos inaccessible. These are not alt-right folks, people. These are literally middle-of-the-road outfits. But if their videos or their content was at all, quote-unquote, more conservative than liberal, you now can't find it on Google or YouTube. And now Google and YouTube are rightfully being sued. As a little adjunct, I noticed that our website on Google, if you Googled it, suddenly, as of a few months ago, was called explicit. Now, you know, a lot of people kind of surfing the web, they see conservative podcast or whatever, and they see the word explicit, and they're not going to open it. Explicit to me means, you know, sexual, this, that, whatever. I mean, something nasty. And I don't think this show may be tough, but it ain't explicit. And we're getting that changed right now. So we've even encountered it personally. My producers, who post the articles on each of the shows and many times the videos, my producers tell me that they have run into a number of instances with growing frequency over the last several months where I tell them there's video X or video Y or video Z, make sure it's on the show, and they go on Google to find video X, Y, or Z. I mean, I've sent them the email with the link, and it's not there. But if they close down Google and open up Yahoo or another search engine, it pops right up. Need we say more? Anyway, all that news came out this week. Not a good week for the alt-left. Then, of course, we have the Benghazi thing, which I talked about previously. The guy who supposedly was captured, then he wasn't captured by Obama. And then he's having wine on the sidewalks of Paris being interviewed by journalists. while the Obama folks tell us that they can't find him, he got captured. And then we have the Bo Bergdahl story, which I think is scurrilous, by the way. Bo Bergdahl, whom the alt-left, Obama, Susan Rice, etc., said served with distinction and honor, had the Rose Garden huggy, huggy, huggy fest. Bo Bergdahl, about a month ago, and I reported this to you, pled guilty, basically, to desertion. He was sentenced by the court this week. Might have been yesterday, in fact, Friday. He was given no prison time. I want that to sink in for a minute. This guy deserted in the face of the enemy. Basically went over to the enemy. Six soldiers that we know of died in their search for him. Others were wounded. Many were affected. He admits basically that he was a traitor, and he gets no jail time. That's beyond my comprehension. And to all you military folks out there listening to this, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. You did not deserve that slap in the face. Okay. Anyway, it's not been a good week for the alt-left. And we get more and more coming out about Hillary, too. And I am convinced you're going to see a special prosecutor for all that nonsense going on. Tell you what, I'm going to skip ahead here. Because I really want to bring you, it kind of ties into this whole First Amendment, Antifa and the Muslims shutting down speech. Antifa's for today, in fact, November 4th, the anniversary date of Trump's election. Antifa planning the beginnings of their communist revolution today. I've brought you those articles in the past. And there's an article which came out, in fact, on 10-2, so just about a month ago. Quote, on November 4th, Antifa is pledging to, quote, gather in the streets of public squares of cities and towns across the country, unquote. And they are promising not to end their protests until, quote, the Trump-Pence regime is removed from power, unquote. Antifa activists are very open about the fact that, quote, violence is necessary, unquote, in order to achieve their goals. The DHS and FBI have both warned that Antifa is engaging in, quote, domestic terrorist violence, unquote. You know, if you tie that in with what I told you previously in the show about the FBI tracking these various Antifa folks to various places and now firmly establishing the link between ISIS' supply of tactics, training, and weaponry, and Antifa's stated intent here, which is basically to have a communist revolution, and violence is necessary, take heed, particularly if you live in suburban or urban areas in the 20 largest cities in the United States. If you want to see what they're up to, you can go to Refuse Fascism. It's unbelievable. RefuseFascism.org, which, by the way, is connected to a gentleman by the name of Bob Avakian and the Revolutionary Communist Party. This is the outfit I told you, what, 3, 4, 5 shows again. You can type in Antifa and read it and listen to it. This is the group that has drafted an entirely new constitution for a post-American order. Okay. Well, let's see what happens today, shall we? I don't think they'll be coming to protest in my neck of the woods if they're really, really wise about it. Okay, last part of the show, folks, and then I'm going to wrap her up because I'm about to go over time. You know, no matter how much time they give me, somehow I always seem to fill it plus some. Let's talk about this Cato Group study that just came out. I mean, literally, when I say just came out, let's see, November 1. I mean, just came out. And the Cato Group is an esteemed outfit. I mean, both right and left quoted. That's pretty rare. So they did a 2017 free speech and tolerance survey. A poll of 2,300 U.S. adults. Here were some of the findings. They're remarkable. 71% of Americans believe that political correctness has silenced important discussions our society needs to have. 58% of Americans believe the political climate prevents them from sharing their own political beliefs. Democrats, remember now, half the Democratic Party are progressive alt-left, folks. This ain't your papa's Democratic Party. A slim majority of Democrats, 53%, do not feel the need to self-censor. Strong majorities of Republicans, 73%, and Independents, 58%, do feel a need to self-censor because of political correctness. That would seem to indicate to me that the push for political correctness, which is really just a mask for the control of speech and the abridgment of your First Amendment rights, is coming from the left. That's what all those numbers tell me. 59% of Americans think people should be allowed to express unpopular opinions in public, even those deeply offensive to others. 40% think government should prevent hate speech. 51% of liberals say it's morally acceptable to punch Nazis. Obviously, they haven't read history, so they don't know they're kind of punching their own left face. 51% of Democrats support a law that requires Americans to use transgender people's preferred gender pronoun. 65% of Republicans say NFL players should be fired if they refuse to stand for the anthem. 58% of Democrats say employers should punish employees for offensive Facebook posts. 51% of liberals say it's morally acceptable to punch fascists. I just found that study fascinating. And it ties right into what we've been talking about. You know, I really think, in the wind-up here, that the progressive left, the alt-left, the Antifa, those that support them, those that believe in what they're doing but don't participate, those that fund them, and we're talking, and those that, in addition to those acts and lack of acts, are really in this only for their own ideology, the Barack Obama cobble, and their own money and power, the Hillary Clinton cobble. And there's some crossover between the two. I really think that those people who are a really a rather small minority, 20-25% of the American population, but about half, at least, of the Democratic Party, they really don't care about this stuff. They really don't care that they're crooked. They really think that they're going to get away with it. They're convinced that us bubbas are dumb and that they have so well infiltrated the government that the deep state will not allow them to be pulled down. I'm going to do a whole show on that mentality at some point. Next week, I'm going to be talking to you about AMAC versus AARP. And for those of you listeners in the, 45, 50 and up range, age-wise, I think you'll find it fascinating. In short, AARP is a progressive mouthpiece, contributor, supporter. It is I'm not sure it's an alt-left company, but it is a left-left company. You kind of like Starbucks, if you will. AMAC, on the other hand, has just as many benefits as AARP, but is a conservative-leaning company. I'm going to tell you the difference between the two. You can choose which ones you want to work with. But my choice is pretty clear, and I think when you hear the facts and figures, which will astound you, your choice will be pretty clear too. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. I hope I've given you some stuff to think about. I hope I have connected even some more dots in this crazy times of alt-left attack and alt-left union with radical Islam. You have a safe week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.